Friends Nation, welcome to the show. Today it is Candace being joined with EJ from I think one of the founders of the Grizz Grindhouse Spaces. If you haven't checked that out, he's doing great work over on Twitter and the Twitter Spaces, a very important presence to Grizz Twitter. EJ, how you doing?
Doing well, Miss Candace. How are you doing today? And thank you for shouting out the space and everything like that.
Of course, of course. So we're just going to talk a little Grizz ball, where we are right now. It's been a pretty good few games for the Memphis Grizzlies, as they are 17-19 currently, and they're second in the West and a half game back from first place. They got an opportunity potentially over this weekend even be in first place, depending on how the game against the Suns and Pelicans game on Sunday goes. Can't determine the standings, but the Grizzlies are essentially in a good place. And on this, they've been 3-0 streak. So what we're going to do is talk about our takeaways from each game, because I think there are definitely some to talk about. And so we'll start with the Miami Heat game that was played. It was basically the second night of a back-to-back. They had just played Detroit that Sunday, and we didn't have any players, right, EJ?
Right. The Heat game coming off the back-to-back, it was our first back-to-back victory this year in both games, so that was good to see. It was a weird game. It was one of those games where all our stars were out and everything like that. But once again, the Grizzlies' way, next man up, these guys stepped up. They went out there and punched them in the mouth. The Heat didn't really know how to respond. And our guys kind of just took it over in that fourth quarter and not let those guys pull it away on the Heat side. So that was a very good game, probably one of our best wins of the season, in my opinion.
Yep. Now, I was just about to say that. I was like, for me, I think that's the most impressive win of the season, just because your starting lineup was pretty much Tyus, Roddy, Steven Adams, Salty Aldama, and Dylan. And starting Roddy, I really didn't know how that was going to go, to be honest. That made me a little nervous, but he played pretty solid ball. You know, he was able to stand and withstand kind of defensively, which was my biggest question with him starting in that game. Tyus Jones dropped 28 points. So it was really good to see Tyus get going, 28 points and 10 assists. It was a great game for him when I think he had leading up to that game struggled a bit.
Yes. Tyus, he's Stones Jones. You know, this is where he gets the nickname from. To me, you know, he's kind of looked better as a starter. I know he was out there kind of looking for a starting role this summer and everything like that. But he decided to go ahead and come back, stick around for a little bit longer. And, you know, I couldn't be happier. I pushed a big agenda last year on bringing this guy back. It was between him and Kyle. I felt like we needed to have that backup point guard. People don't remember, but the bubble, we were missing Tyus Jones. We had DeAnthony Melton as our backup point guard in the bubble, and we struggled mightily in the ball handling situations without him. So, yes, I think, you know, it was very important for us to get him back this summer. And that game against the Miami Heat is exactly why we needed him back, because the games without Ja, anytime he has to sit out or anything like that, or just the rest game, we don't have to count it as a what the NBA call a tank game.
Right.
Yeah, we don't have to count them as a tank game. So having Tyus here, and everybody else that pitched in that night, this is, like I said, it's just the Grizzlies' way, next man up.
Yeah, for sure. And it was really great to see, because I began to question if next man up was still going to be able to take effect, just because the up until this game, Ja missed three games and they were 0-3 without Ja pretty much. And, you know, it really just came down to getting your rookies more comfortable, like getting David Roddy to the point where he can hold up defensively and do a better job of not over helping. That type of thing. I mean, they still have that habit, but he's gotten a lot better in terms of staying in front of his man, defensive rotations, and one thing they've been working with him on is being an on-ball defender. They sort of been giving him kind of like the Dylan Brooks assignment went off of the bench, and you can see that starting to begin to pay dividends, because he is with his physicality, he's able to withstand some of the more physical guys in the league, and I think he's really growing and developing in that way. Any thoughts on Roddy?
You know, it was a lot of doubt, like even from my standpoint and throughout the fan base, about, you know, what could Roddy bring us. You know, you could see the defensive potential because he has the body side, like to keep guys in front of him and things like that. But his feet weren't moving as quick. His lateral movement side to side wasn't all the way there yet or anything like that. And it's still probably not all the way there yet. But you can see the continuing development, and the foot speed is picking up very well. He's learning how to not foul. Like, you know, he's not even fouling a lot. He's bodying up these guys on the perimeter. And, big turnaround from David Roddy. You know, like, if you look through the rookies throughout their rookie years, the guys that we have had, Jaren had a very good rookie year. Ja had a very good rookie year, of course. And then you had guys like Bane. Bane didn't start his rookie year, but you could see the potential there. As a shooter and everything like that, he kind of had a Grayson Allen in front of him, but we moved off of him, and Bane had his opportunity. So, and then Zaire last year, you know, he didn't start out very well either. It took like a little injury or a sickness or something that he had at the very beginning of the year last year. He got to sit over there, look at the game a little bit. I call Zaire the student of the, like a true student of the game. Whatever he sees over there while he's sitting out, he applies it to the game. And that's what he did last year when he turned it around and everything like that. But right now, if I had to say, I think Dave Roddy is on track to be out of the guys that we've had over the last 4 or 5 years. He might sit third as in a rookie class, like as far as rookie performances go. You know, like I said, you got Zaire right there. Bane, once again, had a good rookie year, but I can't say he had, like, you know, a spectacular rookie year. So Zaire and Roddy, I think we're going to be talking about their rookie seasons going forward and how they match up.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. I actually think you're right about that, just because of how much progression he seems to be able to pick up on things pretty quickly. So I think you're right in terms of how fast they're going to be able to progress their games. I think we'll see that go into fruition, which is great. And so, speaking of Zaire, the following game was the return of Zaire Williams. Finally, he was able to make his season debut Wednesday against the Oklahoma City at home. And it was just great to see him out there. He was able to play 18 minutes, and he had the highest plus minus on the team. He just came in, and to me, he just sort of flashed. Like, you noticed when he was there, his athleticism on both ends of the floor, his length now, you could just see how much he's grown in terms of, like, you know, like length. Like, he's actually taller than he was before, and you could just see him bother a lot of these guards and forwards. Whoever he was switched on to, he was bothering them.
Yeah, for sure. In the group chat before that game, you know, the question was, what is your expectations for Zaire? And, you know, people were just trying to keep him low or whatever. But I told everybody, I was like, look, Zaire might not shoot well tonight. Like, the shots is going to be a little rusty. You know, that just comes with it by sitting out. But I think he will excel in a lot of other areas. And that's exactly what he did in that game. Like you said, highest plus minus during that game, even only shooting, I think it was like 2 for 9 from the field. Yep. So, yeah, he's going to continue to find ways to affect the game in other ways. You know, they worked on his ball handling this summer like they did Desmond Bane last summer. So I'm very excited to see what we get from that, because even last summer, even rolling all the way into this year, you could definitely tell Desmond Bane's ball handling and the way that he attacks the rim has been a focal point for the team and him. I think that's somewhat why he has this toe injury now, you know, just doing a little bit more than what he used to do, and a lot more stopping and starting. But yeah, I think Zaire is going to be the same way in a way. Like, I think we're going to be seeing him attacking the rim a little bit more defensively. Like you said, you know, he's going to continue to be probably one of our best point of attack defenders that we even have on the team. Like, I know Dylan Brooks is probably our best perimeter defender, especially on the wings. But when it comes to guard play and point of attack, Zaire's length and the way that he can move is gonna do wonders for us going forward. And that lineup of just the three of them, and they're working around Tyus and BC right now with that lineup. But yeah, the Zaire, Jaren, and Dylan lineup defensively is gonna cause a lot of teams some problems. So if they can just get that offense right, and Zaire gets a little bit more comfortable, and that shot does start to fall, that lineup right there could be one of the lineups that takes us over the top, in my opinion.
Yep. And I 100% agree. And you talked about the defense for Zaire. You know, I think he might give Dylan a run for his money in terms of perimeter defense this year, just because of his length. I've just seen several times where his ability to just do a closeout compared to, you know, other players, or even Dylan, he's just able to bother that shot more because of his length when he does that closeout. And we'll see. So far in this three-game stretch, they've held opponents to pretty much 35% or lower from three. Now we're talking about Miami, who's not a good shooting team, OKC, who's not a great outside shooting team either, and the Pistons. So I think we'll learn more as we go, for sure. But it's what's really great is, like you said, having those two play together, and it leads to an amazing defense. And I have so much confidence that the ball is going, that those shots are eventually going to fall for Zaire. Really what you wanted to know is the other areas he's grown in. And you talked about his playmaking and how they work with him on that. His first game, he came out and had three assists. And they were pretty, a couple of those are pretty, like, really nice pocket passes to BC. I was impressed with just the quickness with which he was able to make his decisions. I think more than anything, he was able to make such quick, decisive decisions when he was passing the ball. You didn't really see a lot of uncertainty for him. So if nothing else, you can just see that summer league experience helping him in that way, because that's going to be really important for him not to have a lot of turnovers as he's trying to be a playmaker, because that's one of the strengths of the bench, I feel, is, you know, being led by Tyus. Also, when it's been led by Bane, it's been pretty efficient, because, you know, Josh sometimes can be turnover heavy some games, and so you want to have a bench that's going to be able to offset that. So that's just something else I took away from that game. But they've just been able to put together, I think, some really strong, decent defensive performances as a whole, as a group. This is a game that, I don't know how we got this far talking about this game, and we didn't even mention it. This was a Jazz career game in terms of the most triple doubles in franchise history. Ja finished the OKC game with 26 points, 11 assists, and 13 rebounds, which is pretty crazy. He came out rebounding like gangbusters those first few minutes, and pretty much just built on it from that. Thoughts on a triple dub from Ja?
Yeah, real quick though, one last point about that Heat game. Xavier Tillman too. Xavier, as we're talking about defense, Xavier Tillman stood up Bam Adebayo time and time again in that Heat game, you know, in the post and everything like that. So shout out X, because, you know, I'm probably one of his biggest doubters. We call him Jaren's friend over there on the spaces. And but shout out to X for sure. He definitely made sure, he actually showed us why he continues to get his playing time and be that fill-in guy for when guys go down in the front court and everything like that. But yes, the Thunder game, Ja, the triple double, you know, breaking the franchise record for most triple doubles, that's very impressive. You know, Charles Barkley made his remarks earlier this year and everything like that. And ever since that moment, You know, I think Jai took it upon himself to make sure that he gets everybody involved. And also Santi Aldama and John Conchar said after that Charles Barkley comment that, you know, it's on them to hit the shots when they are getting the ball from Jai and everything like that. And from that point on, Santi Aldama and John Conchar for sure has been guys that constantly is just knocking down the three, you know, very timely threes and everything like that. I don't want to say clutch, but when I say timely, I mean, you know, we could be up nine in the second quarter, 2 minutes left going into halftime, and one of those two guys will put us up 12, you know, into the halftime. So things like that will win you basketball games. So shout out to those two guys for putting it on themselves to help 12 out and prove Charles Barkley wrong that, you know, Ja Morant makes everybody around him better.
Yeah, and we all knew that was ridiculous when Charles Barkley said that. Sometimes he just be talking just because he be talking. And that's just another example of that. But he's been shooting out double-doubles, you know, like clockwork. It's been double digits. I really don't know if I recall a stretch where he's had this many double digit assist numbers. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but this really stands out to me in terms of his playmaking. And it does, you know, it's not just on him. A lot of times he's making the plays and the guys gotta knock down the shots, but it's just been clicking so far. What do you think that this sustains itself to where, like, over the season where he might be averaging double digits assists? Are we talking about that? Or do you think it'll kind of simmer down at some point as we go throughout the season?
If it's not double digits, I think he can hang around, you know, the upper eight, like 8.9, 9.6, somewhere around there, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But I do think he's going to keep his assist numbers up. The team around him has just gotten better. Like, everybody knows their role now. We have plenty of shooters. We're going to still see more lineups with Ja having a lot more shooters around him, things like that. So, yes, I do think the assist numbers will stay up. And also the rebounding, too. You know, that was my one thing that I thought that Ja would improve on this year, would be rebounding. For the most part, because we were going to need it, especially with Jaren out. And some other guys missing and everything like that, like Zaire. And Ja actually has always been a really good rebounder. We just haven't called up on him to do it so much. The assist numbers and the rebounding numbers, I think, will continue to either hover around where they're at now or improve just slightly.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I think those rebounding numbers, you could see him begin to, I just think he became more intentional about doing it. I think you're right. It wasn't necessarily required of him before. So it wasn't like he never could. It just wasn't something he focused on really trying to do. He kind of let his teammates do that for him, but now he's kind of taking it upon himself. And you could see that in the playoffs last year. I mean, those Timberwolves games where, yeah, he wasn't having a good offensive game, he was still dishing out, you know, you basically saw a taste of this with him having double-digit assists and him having, you know, double-digit rebounds and getting triple-doubles. That's really when you first kind of saw him come along because he wanted to find other ways to contribute to this team. That's just the kind of player that 12 is. And you're kind of seeing it carry over that same intentionality, mindset, habits, or that whatever that he formed when he started doing it more consistently then. And you're just seeing it on display now. It's great to see. It's great to see him continue to push himself, challenge himself to be, you know, the best version of himself, not just for his own stats, but you can tell he's genuinely doing it because that's what the team needs.
Right. And, like I said, just let these guys continue to take it up on themselves to knock down those shots when given the opportunities. I definitely can't wait for Zaire and him to see the court a little bit more together. Yes. Because to me, I think Zaire is one of the guys in the NBA as a whole that runs the lanes better than just about anyone, especially on fast breaks and things like that. So the lobs and everything like that is going to be exciting to see again. Kind of like the Orlando game last year where him, Melton, and Ja were all on a fast break together. And it was, you know, showtime. Jaren actually ran a break with Ja last year and Zaire running the other lane. And, you know, the Wizards actually chose Zaire to kind of take away or whatever. And then it was one of the nastiest finishes of last year with Ja finishing with the windmill alley-oop dunk. So, yeah, it's going to be – some of these teams is going to be feeling it once they run up against these young Grizzlies because these guys are very energetic. We're still very young. You know, without Danny Green, I think we would still probably be like second youngest team in the league. Right now we're sixth with him. But yeah, these teams are going to be worn out each and every night by this young Grizzlies team and the way that we're going to be playing defense, outrunning and outgunning the rest of these teams around the league. Can't wait till we get back to full health for sure.
Yeah, and speaking of health, it's a good transition into talking about the news that we got right after the OKC game. We can still, if you got anything to add to that, we can still go back to it. But right after the OKC game is when we found out the news that the update on Desmond Bane and his injury with his big toe. They said it in addition to the right toe sprain that we knew about, it was also a sesamoid injury, I believe that's how you pronounce it.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so the sesamoid injury that he's experienced, and he has started the revamping process, so that's the good news. He has started that offloading process, but it is expected to take 3 to 4 weeks, and not just everybody was kind of expecting him to be returning around this time, so it'll be an additional 3 or 4 weeks, which means he will miss the Christmas game. And this is, they said it in the report, that it could be longer if his toe doesn't positively respond to the, you know, ramp up process. But, you know, it seems pretty optimistic that his toe will respond positively. But that's where we are, man. Tough news for sure.
Yeah. I was doing the space and everything like that as the news dropped, and I was at work. So, you know, it took a while to process. Very disappointing because I don't know, like as far as back as I can remember this, you know, even back in the Green Grind era a little bit, especially with, you know, our favorite person in the world, Chandler Parsons, you know, like it's just been injuries after injuries after injuries. Even Justice Winslow, you know, he had some back problems after we made that trade. So like we never got to see this team with the supposed starting five that we, you know, are supposed to have. So even the last 4 years with Ja Morant, with this new regime that we have, these guys just haven't been able to put a quarter of the season together healthy. And the reason why I'm always talking about it is because, like, I know these guys are very good and they're very skilled, like, even individually, but it still takes team chemistry and being out there together to be able to fully form to be a championship contender. You need to know where guys are going to be in spots, even when you can't see them, like, you know what I'm saying? So, or leading guys to certain spots on the floor without it being the actual play call or something like that. So that's my reasoning for why I want a very good, healthy starting five. But, you know, we're going to continue to battle through it. Hopefully Desmond Bane gets fully recovered so he won't have to have any type of surgery or anything like that. And, I think our guys will chip in, continue to play the way that they're playing. And John Conchar, he's been the one that has filled in these spots when Ja's been out, while Bane's been out. Dylan Brooks missed, 3 games at the very beginning of the season. So John Conchar has been that starting piece. And, you know, I constantly call him an 11th man and everything like that. But he's definitely shutting me up as well because, once again, he's continuously hitting the timely three. His defense has picked up tremendously. Going back to that Knicks game against Jalen Brunson at the end of that game, you know, his defense was the one that won us the game, not Dylan Brooks. So, yeah, shout out John Conchar, and hopefully we will get Bane back and nobody else gets like a hangnail or something. So they're out 2 weeks.
Yeah, for sure. I 100% agree. That's been the frustrating part of it. It's just, you know, it's been a domino effect. As soon as you think you're getting healthy, somebody else has gone down. So we really just got to hope that this is kind of the last of this, that Bane can come back. And like you said, we can at least get a consistent period of seeing this starting lineup together. Because I agree that chemistry is important. There's also still delay on Jake LaRavia. He's still been out. And I think, you know, it's really unfortunate for him because I think from a standpoint of how this team is constructed without Bane right now, these would be really good opportunities for him to sort of, you know, help fill the role from 3-point shooting. And I know he was struggling coming back from being sick when he came back. So he was in a little bit of a slump there, but it's unfortunate for him too, that he's sort of missing out on these minutes that kind of are there. But with Zaire back, you know, it's maybe a little different, but I still think that from a, like I said, just a shooting perspective, they might miss that. But the positive news when it comes to Bane, I'll say this, is it depends on his timeline. If he comes back within the 3 weeks mark, they said anywhere from 3 to 4 weeks. So if he's on the more optimistic side of that, I heard Keith from Fast Break Breakfast, a Grits and Grind podcast. If you don't listen to that, he mentioned that will only be 8 games. Because of how spaced out the Grizzlies games are over these next 3 weeks. They only play 8 games from now to there, which is pretty optimistic. But if he doesn't come on the three-week mark, if it's more the 4-week mark, that will be more like 12 games. So there's a really big difference, you know, depending on when exactly he's going to come back. And hopefully he'll be closer to only missing the 8 games. Because I think at that point, the schedule will start to get a little bit tougher. And that's when you know, you're paying the more elite teams. You want Bane back for those, for sure.
Yeah, I think the 8th game would be the Pelicans game, New Year's Eve, right mm-hmm. after the Christmas Day game against the Warriors. So yeah, it would be nice to get him back in that stretch right there. And like you said, it is a big difference between 9 games and 12 or 8 games and 12 games missed. Like, I know numbers wise, it don't seem like it, but yeah, when you're talking about games and everything like that, that you could win, or lose, it could make a big difference, especially as tight as the West is right now with the standings.
And the way that, you know, that's going to be basically 4 games and probably 5 games with us in 5 days. Sounds like it's going to be really one of those, you know, in a week, you're going to be playing an extra 4 games. So you need that depth, I think, just to kind of withstand those periods. You want as many people healthy for that as you can get. And if that 8th game is that Pelicans game, I can see them, you know, they generally don't bring people back on the first night of a back-to-back. More than likely, he might then come back on that 2nd game. So I would guess maybe the ninth game. And that would be fair. I guess you could live with that. But I agree. In that time frame, that'd be great. That's what we're hoping for. Anything?
Yes, ma'am.
You want to add anything about that OKC game?
I'm trying to think. Oh, that was the game. We didn't get Tripp going at all at first. You know, he didn't touch the ball until the 2nd quarter. I know we're going to discuss it a little bit later about some of our what we really like to see and what we don't like to see. But just to foreshadow that a little bit, that's the one thing I'm going to continue to push. Ja and Jaren, chemistry, bond on the court, can't be broken, you know, things like that. Like that's something that I still need to see. And that game right there against OKC Thunder, even though Ja ended up with a triple-double, And Jaren did get going later in that game. I still believe that it should be on Ja, and then Jaren to tell Ja or whatever he needs to do with Ja. Let's get me involved, man. Like, I need touches in the post when I'm posting up and things like that. Like, not a touch at the top of the three in the second quarter, and my first bucket, you know, is going downhill. Like, you know, it's good and all, but at the same time, Jaren Jackson Jr. could be a very key piece to us going over the top, and it's going to take 12 and 13 to make that happen.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, it's one of those strange things where as close as they are off the court, they just haven't figured out that chemistry on the court. It's just something they continue to struggle with. And I don't know. Part of it is, I think, Josh's mindset. When they made the trade for to trade JV to the Pelicans and get Steven Adams in return, it was with the thought that Ja would have to not worry about post touches as much. And I wonder how much of that goes into, and his understanding of that goes into his neglecting the paint now. Because while, you know, you don't want this team ran through the post by any means, there are so many opportunities where Steven Adams or Jaren Jackson, I can't even understand like bypassing Steve-O just because if he gets fouled, he's probably not going to be able to make those free throws. But from the Jaren Jackson Jr. perspective, that's not really a concern. So you want to try to get him in the paint. And there's been times where he's called for the ball, whether in the paint or on the perimeter, because he now has the ability to take off the dribble and get inside and sort of dominate a little bit more than he did last year. So either way, even if it's not a post touch, just get the guy touches, because he's going to be able to find a way to score. And I just think it's really Ja looking for it. It doesn't seem like he's so used to, you know, throwing out to the perimeter, kick out, you know, drive and kick out, that he's just, I don't know if he's missing it or I don't know what, but they really do need to work on that. The good news is I've heard Taylor Jenkins mention that. We'll talk about this a little bit in the Pistons game, but it's something that he mentioned post-game after the Pistons game yesterday, and talking about these teams switching on them and basically needing to take advantage of the mismatch with Jaren in the paint. And so if the coach is emphasizing it more, hopefully we'll be able to see more improvement in that area.
Yes. But yeah, we can get to the Pistons game.
Okay.
But yeah, that Thunder game, another good win, and another nice team win. That's, you know, we're on a 5-game win streak as we're getting to this Pistons game, 5-game win streak. So, and I think all these wins have been team wins. Everybody has contributed in the most way. We haven't had to call 12. We haven't missed Bain as far as being the closer that he was beginning to be at the beginning of the season and everything like that. So yeah, just as a whole team and a whole unit, these guys, these past 5 games have all chipped in. And you know, I know a lot of plus minus people out there and everything like that, but I haven't looked at the plus minuses, but I'm sure we've had a lot more pluses with the guys on the roster than minuses over these past 5 games.
That is 100% true. I'm looking at them now. So yeah, I mean, I think in the Heat game, you had 2 people in negative. Nobody was negative against OKC. And you had a few bench players in the negative against the Pistons. But the general trend is you are correct. Overall, it has been more plus than minuses. And you're right about the contributions from everybody. It really has been team wins. And I think I want to attribute that mostly to everyone's improved defense. A lot of that has to do with Jaren. That cannot be neglected, but Jaren can't be on the court at all times. And it seems like, I think early on those first few games when Jaren came back, there was a distinct difference between when Jaren was off the court and when he was on the court, and teams, in terms of the other team would make a run. And that still happens from time to time, but you can just see, like you mentioned, Conchar has improved on defense. David Roddy has improved on defense. So it just doesn't fall off the rails. And I think that's contributed to them not having to, like you said, call 12 or when Bane was kind of having to pull it out of the end. It was just because the defense, they couldn't get stops. They couldn't, you know, stop anybody at any point. And so you had these close games where you basically had to dang near shootout in order to win the game. And now they're winning more on the defensive end as a team.
And, yeah, also with Tripp going out of games and everything like that, you know, Santi has actually been very good as a rim protector this year. You know, he it's not very pretty on the perimeter when he has to go guard on the wings. But anytime he's helped defending in the paint, that guy's been very, very good. So shout out to Santi Aldama, because I think he actually is a big part of that for that bench unit. When Jaren does go out of games, you still have somebody behind you at the rim that can protect it. So everybody isn't helping as much anymore. We're not giving up as many threes. It's still not to where it needs to be, but you could definitely see it's starting to get less and less 3-point shots hit on us, because that was really the big concern early on.
Especially wide open threes. That's really, even if they do hit threes on us, they generally not wide open the way they was wide open before. Because I used to just wonder, like, what what was the plan there? Like, those rotations used to be atrocious at times, but it is definitely improved. And yeah, I'm thank you for bringing it up, because I wanted to talk about Santi, because he's had double digit points in 2 out of 3 games, and even this last game against the Pistons, he had 9 points. It wasn't quite double digits, but he's just been a huge part of why this team has been able to go on this win streak. He's adjusted well to the bench. You didn't know how he would go from, you know, starting to going to the bench. Some players become, you know, when they get less opportunities, they're not as efficient, but he's been very efficient in his opportunities. He's been able to go within the flow of the offense. Like you said, his defense has been there. He's just been all around. He's been great for this team. And it gives his ability to shoot the ball, his ability to rim protect, gives so much versatility, I think, to that bench unit. I mentioned this, I tweeted out about this, the possibility of the lineups between Santi Aldama and Jaren Jackson Jr. They haven't done it much, but it's plus 25 when they have done it. And so that's something you can play around with, throwing Zaire in there. That gives you so much length and so many options come playoff time. So it's just exciting to see him take advantage of these opportunities to still be a huge contributing member for the bench, even though he's not starting anymore. And you know that I have confidence that he's going to be able to contribute in the playoffs to this team. Similar to the way that Zaire did. Zaire was able to, you know, the moment wasn't too big for him. And just from what I've seen from Santi and his mindset, he just kind of seems to have a little bit of a swagger about him, Santi. You know, he got a little bit of a fight to him. So I think he can be huge for this team going forward.
Yes, ma'am. And speaking of last night too, Jaren Jackson, you know, on both sides of the floor last night, he was the best player on the floor. Like, there was no question about it. This guy, as a doubter in me from last season, even in the all season with him not being able to work out and everything like that, you know, I can't really say that his game has improved. Like, you know, there's not certain things that he just got a whole lot better at, but his mindset, his whole mindset has just changed. It just seems like he feels like nobody can guard him out there. He's gotten a lot better, a lot smarter defensively about fouling. He's not getting the bad whistles too, because some of that was bad whistles last year and things like that. But yeah, the guy, he's definitely got his mindset focused right now on, there's not a lot of guys that can stop me. I'm going to post you up. If my guys don't get me the ball, I'm going to demand the ball. And rebounding too, like, even if he's not getting those post-injury passes or anything like that, he has found a way to kind of come in, diving in from the corners or anything like that, and grabbing offensive rebounds. Defensively, he's picked it up, rebounding as well. So yeah, Jaren Jackson Jr. last night, that was a game right there where he was clearly the best player on the floor.
Yep, and I agree. And I hope that they begin to feature him more, because he has been. I would argue that because of his change in mindset, you have seen an increase in his game. Like, I don't believe he didn't have post moves. So he would always be more prone to turnovers or travels when he was trying to post somebody up, just because he wouldn't take that extra dribble to kind of gather that, you know, power dribble that he needs in order to be able to really get to the basket. So you see his efficiency has gone up from 2. Like last night, he was 8 of 12. You see that continuing. I do think he worked on that jumper because he does less of a push off in his release when he's shooting the ball. And it's still wonky. His three point shot. I think that's always gonna be that. But it's closer to where it was, you know, his rookie year. Like he was 3 from 5 last night from the 3-point line. You can just see that confidence and technique, I'd say, because you gotta have tech. His shot looks different. He doesn't push off nearly. He used to almost throw himself into the shot when he was shooting last year. I'd say the fouling, that's a big thing, and that was pretty much all mental, but that was huge for him because he wasn't able to stay on the court. So then you see all his other production go up. He is more intentional about rebounding. All around, he's just been really impressive. It was so frustrating in that OKC game, is to go back to that, watching them kind of ignore him, knowing that if you just feed this man, that it takes you and pretty much can get you the game, because there's nobody that can stop the guy. The one person who has been consistent about feeding Jaren is Ben Dillon, and you can see Dillon's been getting assists because of it.
Oh, most definitely. Dillon Brooks, man, like the other guy that, you know, all of us kind of was worried about going into the season and everything like that, rolling off the Warrior series, and this guy has bought in. You know, that's another reason why I would like to see us fully healthy, so we can, like, right now, Dillon Brooks for the majority of the season still has kind of been second option, third option some nights, things like that. And that's why I need to see us fully healthy, because I'm not going to hold it, like, Dillon Brooks is a fourth option fully healthy.
Right.
You got John Morant, Desmond Bain, Jaren Jackson Jr. That's your three top dogs. You know, it's questionable on Jaren's offense side and everything like that. But like you said, it's been Dillon that has made it the focal point to get Jaren the ball down low. So Dillon will fall back into that fourth option. And that's where we need to see how he really has bought into this team. Like I said, right now, he's kind of still been that second, third option in a way. But how is he going to feel? And what kind of shot selections are we going to see as a fourth option, Dillon Brooks?
That's a great point. And when he was a third option, when it was Ja Bane and then him, he was doing a pretty good job of buying in. But like you said, with him being that fourth option, that does change things. And do you get, you know, the things get more complicated. That's another great point, because another reason why I want to see the team get healthy is because I want to see how intentional they're going to be about making sure Jaren still gets the shots that he needs. Because you want to make sure that he's still a part of this offense. I want to hope that my hope is that the OKC game doesn't happen all the time when it's Bane and Jaren. Right now, Jaren has the opportunity to get a lot of those touches in the OKC game especially, but even in the Pistons game when it's the second unit and it's basically Dillon and Jaren, and they're kind of with their second unit, Dillon's feeding Jaren, and that's how he's getting a lot of those touches to get, you know, involved in the game. But it used to be Bane running that unit. So I'm curious as to how they're going to level that out, if they're still going to have Jaren run with that second unit and just keep more Bane and Ja together. Do you have any thoughts on that, by the way?
Yeah, I was actually thinking about this last night. You know, I'm all for, like, trial and error type things in the regular season, right? Especially the way that we're sitting right now, you know, second in the West currently. Like I said, I know it's very tight in the West right now, but, you know, I think we're still good. But, yeah, we need to just kind of figure out how Taylor Jenkins just needs the lineups out there so he can balance the powers and everything like that. Like, for me, the way I kind of seen it right now, I think it's very important to try to get Dillon Brooks and Jaren Jackson Jr. going first halves. You know, like you said, like Dillon, he's actually been pretty good starting out games and everything like that. Was it the OKC game where he kind of had like 7 to 9 points right out the gates?
Yep. Think
okay,
so.
So yeah, you get those two guys started early and everything like that, keep them engaged into the game. And the reason I say that too is because I just feel like Ja and Bane have developed themselves into being able to take over games whenever called upon. You know, even last night, Ja didn't have a great game at all. But that third quarter, even the third quarter of the Thunder game, those have been his best quarters. You know, and I just think like that's just something that Taylor Jenkins is just trying to do right now. While Bane is out, trying to figure out the points in the game where I need certain guys to step up the biggest. So once again, just trying to find that balance of, from what I've seen so far, at least, Dylan Brooks and Jaren Jackson Jr. getting started first halves, get them going early. If Dylan Brooks does cool off, you know, he's even, I think from my standpoint that I've seen, he, even if he cools off a little bit, he's actually starting to work the other guys in a lot quicker than what he would used to. He might go 0-for-10.25 in the past or something, but if he goes 0-for-4, I think he starts looking for Jaren down low or start swinging the ball a little bit quicker and things like that this year. So it's just little things like that that people have to pay attention to with Dylan and not so much of his individual numbers like his inefficiency and things like that. Like, just look at the totality of the game. When was he taking those shots that he was missing? If they were in the first half and then in the second half he only shot the ball twice, that means he was swinging the ball more. So that's still an effective game. That's winning basketball, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'd agree. And he has progressed. You know, sometimes you'll see him revert back. That Heat game was a poor example of that. That Heat game, he really chucked up some shots that he should have just left alone late in that game. But for the most part, I agree with you. You can at least see he's trying to, right? Like, I still think it's one of those things that it doesn't come natural to Dylan. But I mean, it's all the guy. That's all you can ask him to do. I mean, you can't build a habit overnight. But you just see him trying to be less tunnel vision in those moments and pay attention. You know, be more aware of how he's doing tonight, and not just chucking up shots blindly. And in the Heat game, in his defense, you know, there weren't a ton of other options. You, Dave, Roddy, other guys like that. They aren't going to take those shots. So even then, it was understandable why he was doing that. And hopefully he can continue to grow in that area, because that's huge for this team. The biggest question on Dylan is, can he buy into the role that the Grizzlies need of him? Or is he just too, I don't know what the word is, not tenacious, but
volatile. Erratic. Something like he's just an erratic player, man.
Yeah.
I know some people call him selfish and things like that, but you know, Dylan has always been Memphis. Like, since he's been here, he's even spoken out against guys that were here that didn't really want to be here, things like that. So I don't think Dylan is that selfish. Sometimes it can pop up like that on the court. But, you know, when we talk about the heart and soul of teams, Dylan Brooks has definitely been the heart and soul of this next gen era.
For sure. No doubt. And I'm always of the belief that Dylan is selfish by nature, but that he doesn't want to be. That's my theory. He doesn't want to be. His instinct is sometimes tunnel vision and blind. Like, in a situation, that's sort of his gut, like, response. But he seems to really want to be what this team needs him to be. And you can see him trying to be better in those areas. Sometimes it's going to pop out, because I think that's him reverting back to what he knows. But the more he tries to be better, and I'd say he's really only been intentional about it, I'd say more this year, some spots last year, but it's not been a ton of time where they've really asked him to taper it down, right? Where it was clear that Desmond's the guy over you, and it was clear that Jaren's the guy over you. That hasn't really, I mean, it started developing itself last year, but it's not been a ton of time. So let's just, I wish he this wasn't his last year in the final contract, because they kind of make a decision on him. And what you'd like to see is, you know, over time, can he grow in it? But anyway, we'll see how that goes. They're winning. In the meantime, I'm liking what I'm seeing from him, and I'm going to praise him when he's good dealing, and I'm going to call him out when he's bad dealing. So I'm going to give him his praises lately. He's been doing well. So let's just talk about, just as we wrap up here, sort of our general takeaways in this 3-0 span. There's a lot to be excited about. And, you know, I do think there have been some things to be concerned about. But let's start out with what's been most exciting to you so far over this 3-game stretch?
Over these last 3 games, it's Jaren Jackson Jr. once again, as the guy that, you know, doubted so much this offseason and everything like that. And just hearing some of the noise about, you know, he shoots too many threes. His 3-point percentage has gone down every year, things like that. This guy has just been the most impressive to me. Mindset is right where it needs to be. And even at the last night, he said that this still isn't the best version of himself. He still has another level to go. And hearing that from Tripp, you know, it's very special to me. So he's the guy that I think could just help us get over the top. It's not all about the offense, I know, but just continue to play smart defense, stay on the floor without the fouls, you know, continuing not to dip that shoulder on the offensive side into somebody's chest so he doesn't get a lot of offensive fouls. So, yes, Jaren Jackson Jr. has been the most impressive, in my opinion, over the last 3 games. And then as far as the whole team goes, just continuing to knock down shots when called upon. Once again, John Conchar and Santi Aldama, the day after the Charles Barkley comments, came out and said it's on us to make sure that that the world sees that John makes his teammates better. And those guys, specifically those 2 guys, has done that, knock down the shots when John is driving and he kicks it out to them. Tyus Jones filling in one of these games in the last 3 games, showing why he got the bag that he got. Brandon Clark, too. We haven't even talked about Brandon Clark. Yeah. Brandon Clark looks his best with Jaren Jackson Jr. out there on that court. And these past 3 games has definitely highlighted that.
Yeah, 17 points last night. He had an incredible game against the Pistons.
And then the what was the Thunder game or the Heat game, he also had, what, double figures in scoring as well, if I'm correct?
11 against the Heat and is that at 17? Oh, it was OKC game. He had another 17 against OKC. Yep. So back-to-back games, it's been his best games.
Yep. Like I said, just him, we call Jaren's friends, Brandon Clark and Xavier Tillman. And like I said, both of those guys has definitely looked a lot better, a lot more comfortable as Tripp has been back. So just, you know, credit to the front office once again for not listening to us and everybody, all the noise, and just continuously trusting these guys to continue to build the chemistry on and off the court.
Yeah, I just got to piggyback off that Jaren comment, because I talked a lot about Jaren in my previous 2 podcasts. So I'm not going to go too far in, because I've been shining the praise heavy on Jaren Jackson. But right now, I think he would lead the league in block shots. He's played 10 games, so I'm wondering, he should be eligible to be on the official ESPN block list. But I didn't see his name under points, so I got to go back and double check that when I was looking at his the scores on ESPN. But anyway, he's making a case for All-Star. I just got to say, he's looking like a defense player of the year. He is looking like a All-Star candidate. And I really hope that the Grizzlies can maintain this positioning standings in the West, because if they can, it even more so improves his chances of getting that, because they generally give the top teams, you know, at least a couple of those guys get a second look at All-Star chances. And right now, there are a few that I could think of that are less certain. Like, I mean, AD, of course, balling out, Zion, but then like to me, it's true.
Yeah, Jokic. I mean, you got three right there. Well, Jokic, AD, Zion. It's going to be hard to kind of battle against those guys. Especially Zion could be funky because, you know, he does miss games as well. But everybody knows, you know, he's an NBA darling right now. So, sure. And he does put up the points. So it'd be kind of hard to keep him out.
But he can go. He can still cut in as a reserve, though. I think that spot for sure is he should get that.
Right. And, yeah, like, I think you got, like, a Sabonis out there, maybe, Laurie marketing. But, yes, if Tripp continues to play the way that he's been playing, there shouldn't be much doubt at all that he could end up on that all-star roster for sure. And, you know, I just want to make sure that everybody understands that, you know, the NBA is still narrative-driven in a way and things like that. So, yeah. It's going to take all of us, the media members out there, our beat writers, and then the fans to retweet, you know, talk about this guy as much as possible. Because if we're not, you know, the landscape of the NBA fans and everything like that would not be able to see Jaren Jackson Jr. impact on the basketball court.
Yeah, I'm already ready to go to war in the threads. I'm ready for it. But for me, my most exciting thing of this stretch has been Zaire, the return of Zaire Williams, just because I really wanted to see this second unit begin to blossom. It's really important for this second unit to be a strength of the team, especially given, you know, how in and out we have been with our starters, not really having any time seeing our starting lineup together. So, Zaire just pops, man, he just pops off the screen to me. I just love watching his athleticism. I think it was missed. With this team, the way it's constructed this year, there is less athleticism on it, especially on that second unit, than there was before. And so I think seeing that adds another dimension. I think their transition offense is about to peak. Like you said, I hope he gets more minutes with Jai just because you can see that two-man game, him running the floor. He's excellent at that. But more impressively, I know his offensive rating right now is 93.3. That's not where you want it, but his shot is going to fall. The shot looks good, really. He seems too to be, we didn't mention this when we were talking about Sonny, but the no-dip shot that we've seen going around from Santi, he's been the one to make a signature. But I actually saw Zaire try it a couple times. It just, the shot didn't go down for him. But Santi's introduced this new, like, catch it high, and he'll, without letting his arm fall, he'll just, like, shoot it in the air. So I wonder if it's being coached up or not, especially it seems to be more the guys who have that length anyway. It's basically an unblockable shot. If Zaire can master that same move, that's gonna be thrilling.
Yeah, that the no dip three is crazy. Like, yeah. when he shot that the other night, Santi, I was like, man, what did I just see? But maybe it's something they worked on together as they spent time in Spain together. Those two guys, you know, were rookies together, drafted together and everything like that. And they spent the summer with each other in Spain, where Santi is from. So maybe it's a coach over there that worked with them on that. I'm not sure. But whatever it may be, as long as it continues to go down, I'm all for it. Because like you said, at that length and size, possibly Zaire being 6'10" now, and then Santi being 7'7", yeah, that's an unblockable shot, and you can't really affect it much by just putting a hand up.
Nope, not at all. So that would be a great shot to see. You know, if they can master it in the regular season, that's going to be lethal in the playoffs. I mean, I'm getting hyped. So it's not just the offense that I think that'll grow for Zaire. That's not really been there yet, at least from a scoring perspective. But his defense, I talked about it again, it's a small sample size. But, you know, right now, in the even though he struggled a little bit more in this Pistons game from last night, he still has a defensive rating over those two games of 88.2. You can see his usage rate going up a little bit more. It's at 14%. last year, and this year it's almost 17%. It's a small bump, but it's just, you know, I mean, he's only getting small minutes. So right now, that's pretty, it's pretty incredible to see him continue to grow and build on that. For me, I'm just super excited about that, to have that extra shot creation ability on the floor. It seems like it'll be natural to him. I don't know. I think it'll be a little bit later in the year, maybe after the All-Star break, before we see maybe his self-creation. I haven't seen as many flashes of his self-creation, like off the dribble yet, but I have seen just his assist ability and decision-making in that. Like, that seems to be, like, in place. He can, like, hit the floor running with that ability. So anyway, I just want to see more of that. And with that, plus Roddy's being improved, this bench can go back to being one of the best benches in the league, which is awesome.
Yeah, and it's been interesting to see Roddy first off the bench over Zaire. I do think it's going to change, but Roddy is putting pressure on some of these guys for minutes. Like you said earlier with Jake, you know, he's still dealing with some injuries and things like that, and it's going to be very tough for him to work his way back in. And you did say that this would have been a good time for him because while Bane is out, because we do need that shooter. But yes, David Roddy, man, like, he's been the first one off that bench so far. I'm not sure how long that will continue, but you know, we'll see what Jenkins wants to do with that going forward. And it's going to be very interesting because I really do feel like these guys want to give David Roddy as much opportunity as possible. And on top of that, he's earning it very well right now.
I'll say this. At first, I was offended watching Roddy check in first. But I think the way they're doing it, if they're going to continue to do it, I think I'd actually be okay with it, because what it does is it allows for Zaire to play more in the fourth. And it, I don't know, I can't remember if he's closed. I know he closed his first game back against OKC. I can't remember if he closed against the Pistons. Do you remember?
I don't think he did, but
that's right. They brought the starters back to finish that one.
Yeah, they did.
Okay. But if he's gonna be able to be right now, he's had more minutes. Even though he did not close yet, we played 16 minutes, Roddy played 15, even though Roddy was the first one to check in. So it looks like it's just a timing thing to get Zaire more playing with Jai in that fourth. And if that's the case, I think I'm okay with it. Like, in theory, you wanna see Zaire off the bench first, but you know, if he's going to get more minutes at the end of the day, and if he's going to be able to play more with Jai in that fourth quarter, then I'd rather have him there than Roddy there at that time.
Yeah, I agree.
Yep. So, all right. So those are things excited about that we are excited about. But if there was a negative to pull from this three-game winning streak, it's really a five-game winning streak, but these past three games, for me, it's going to be free throws. The free throws, it started to get better. We've seen, it's been a frustration all year long of these long stretches of just like 60% free throw shooting, barely 70% free throw shooting. I don't understand why it's so much of a challenge. It was a challenge last year, but it was a challenge and they'd be at like 70%. This year, we're seeing more games, like last night's game, they shot 53%. On their free throws. That's terrible. And Steven Adams he had two free throw attempts, but it wasn't because of Steven Adams. They can't put that on him. Just tough to see. This is going to be so important in the playoffs, where as good as they are, you're not going to be able to dominate in the playoffs. You're going to need to be able to make free throws to keep these games close. And an alarming trend is, for me personally, it's not happening these three games, but well, maybe it has actually, but Ja missing free throws in the fourth, like him being tired and missing free throws. It used to be last year that he was poor at free throw shooting, but then in the fourth quarter, he'd make his shots generally for the most part. More often than not, you could depend on him when the game was on the line to make it. And that hadn't been the case, which is exactly why you were hinting at EJ with Bane being a better closer, because Ja hadn't been able to make those shots, those free throw shots lately. And that's my number one concern right now for the team.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at the three game sample size, two of those games we shot 100% from the free throw line and 80% from the free throw line. So actually, that's really good. But as you said last night, we're down back down to in 50s. So like, that's just unacceptable. You know, being Memphis, being a Memphis fan and everything like that. Of course, the free throw line has always been our nemesis. So yeah, I don't know what these guys are going to have to do. I don't know if they're just going to have to, maybe they're going to have to like condition first, like get like super tired in practice and then go shoot some free throws, because clearly just shooting free throws in practice isn't getting it done. And they're just missing more of them when they're tired late in games, things like that, especially Ja, like you said. And that's definitely my biggest concern with him. Like, bro, you got as the leader of this team, the focal point of this team, the main ball handler of this team, you're going to have to knock down shots late in games. You're just going to have to. If you can't, you're going to have to figure out a way to let somebody else take up, be able to handle the ball late in games or something like that, because, you know, it'll come a playoff time where teams are just going to foul you. So you'll have to go to the free throw line. So, yes, I agree. The free throws is the biggest concern. Of course, Steven Adams hurts us a lot there, but he hasn't shot too many free throws lately. So, it's a focus thing. And I think it's just them being tired. So once again, if they need to go run a few laps and then shoot the free throws in practice, do something like that. But something there needs to change. And it's going to be Taylor Jenkins and these guys to get it worked on.
Yeah, for sure. Especially, like you said, in Josh's case, his game is getting to the rim. So, I mean, you can't have your game getting to the rim and then not be able to knock down a shot. Like, you know what I mean? Like, at that point, I agree with you. You need to get better off-ball movement and create a play where you can come off and just catch and shoot or something. But that's not his game, you know? So, I have faith he can improve in that area. I just want to see it. Sooner than later, I don't want to get to the halfway mark, and this is still an issue, you know, with these late game free throws, particularly from Ja, because we've seen him be the opposite of this. And I mean, if I had to pick, I'd rather choose the opposite of this, where he, if I had, you know, where when it's close to the game and game's on the line, you can make them. That's the preferred option if he can't be consistent, you know, throughout the game. But anyway, what's what you sort of hinted at one of your bigger concerns with Tripp.
So yeah, that's my biggest concern still is just the 12 and 13. I'm going to continuously believe it and say it. These two guys are going to have to develop a bond on that court that just can't be broken. Like night in, night out, when those two guys step on that court, you know, fear is a strong word. It doesn't have to be fear, but they need to have, you know, put something onto that next team to make them say, oh man, we got John Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. showing up tonight. We got to look out for these two guys right here. We have to make sure that we're focused rotationally on these two guys. We have to focus on the way that they're trying to figure out where they need to be out on the floor and everything like that. So, that chemistry between those two just needs to strengthen up a little bit more. Like I said, just even the eye contacts on the floor with each other needs to pick up and everything. Like you said earlier, these guys love each other off the basketball court. You could tell it, like the chemistry is so strong. Like these guys absolutely love each other off that basketball court. But on the court, it just, you just can't say that Jaren Jackson Jr. and Ja Morant as a duo is like, you know, tops of the league or anything like that. So yes, that's still my main concern and will continuously be my concern until, you know, I see a little bit different. Right. Like I said, just some eye contact things or just letting each other know, hey, seeing Ja point to Jaren, like, hey, if I go left this way, I need you to fade out to the right that way. Things like that. So nothing too big. Just like I said, just looking like a duo on the basketball court.
Yeah, and I think and those are the things that can make a difference between how far you go in the playoffs or not. So, I mean, it is a small thing, and that's for sure, but it's big when you're talking about, you know, can this team win a championship? I even saw that translate, even if there's this moment, and I don't know, it stands out to me as an illustration of just where they are. Jai's in corner of basically two guys come up and Jaren comes up to try to screen, and there's this awkward kind of interaction where Jaren's trying to figure out where Jai wants in turn, where he wants him to be setting the screen, and I think Jai just kind of eventually just waves it off. They basically just don't make it work. I think it looked like I was there in person, so to me it looked like Jai was a little frustrated, and anyway they continued with the play, but it's just, you could just see that Jaren's having a hard time figuring out what Jai wants from the screen, and Jai trying to figure out what Jaren's doing on the screen. And that's the kind of thing where, it was good to see in the way of, that's an example of, hey, this needs to be worked on. Hopefully you can see those moments more, because it's going to look awkward as they work through it, but hopefully you can continue to see that, to know that they're working through those things on the court, because you can't do it any other way.
Yes, and you're right. Like, Jai weighs off Jaren screens more, or if it's like a, a double screen at the top or a standing screen at the top with Steve-O and Jaren, like, Jai will always go Steve-O's way. So, and of course, Steven Adams sets the best screens and everything like that. So it makes sense, but at the same time, once again, 12 and 13. Those are the two guys that's going to bring us the championship. It's been a huge blessing that we did get a guy like Desmond Bane, and a guy that has stepped up in being a closer that he has become at the beginning of the season, everything like that. But I'll continuously say 12 and 13, that will help Memphis get to the championship level that we need to be at.
Right. And what's exciting is the Grizzlies are in the place they're at. They are second in the West, like I said, a half game back of first place, right below the New Orleans Pelicans right now. And there's still room to grow. There's still room for them to get better. There's still room for them to get healthy. And so the ceiling on this team this year is just very high. And so it's an exciting season. EJ, appreciate you being on, man. Really appreciate you taking the time to talk some Grizz basketball with me. Why don't you tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, y'all can find me. My personal account is at EJ2K19 on Twitter. And also, of course, at Spaces Grizzlies. I run the Spaces account over there and everything like that. Appreciate everybody supporting that. Once again, not a podcast platform or anything, just on Twitter. Able to come up after every game, just talking to the fans, allowed about 8 people in the room at a time to talk. So anyone that ever wants to come and enjoy the games and come praise the Grizzlies and everything like that, please fall through, or just listen back on replay or anything like that. So appreciate you, Candace, having me on as well, and just continue to do the good work that you're doing over here on the Sports East Post.
Much appreciated. Definitely, guys, be sure to check out Grindhouse Grizzly Spaces. They are always, they're some of the best spaces I've ever been in, for sure. So if you're not regularly going after the games to go check them out, make sure you do so. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at CandaceH901. You can follow my guy Isaac at Isaac_NBA. And you can follow my guy David at NBADWheel21. We'll be with you guys with another update in a few games. In the meantime, we appreciate your support. We couldn't do what we do without you guys listening. And that's it, guys. I'm out. We gone.
Those presentations.